We hear Interval every Thursday at about 3:30, and if you'd like to write to Francis or to any of our other contributors here on Fresh Air, you'd be writing to Fresh Air at WUHY, Independence Mall West, 150 North 6th Street, Philadelphia 19106. It's 4:05, and this is Fresh Air on WUHY FM in Philadelphia. Tomorrow, the film Cruising opens in Philadelphia, and when it does, there will be a demonstration of gay men and women and concerned heterosexuals who want the film's potential viewers to know that the portrayal of gay life in Cruising isn't anything like the life real gay people live. Cruising is a film directed by William Friedkin, also the director of The Boys in the Band, The French Connection, and The Exorcist. Cruising stars Al Pacino as a heterosexual cop whose assignment is to track down a killer. This killer frequents the S&M gay bars in Manhattan, where he meets the men who become his victims. He leaves them, some of them castrated, penis in mouth. When the film was being shot in New York, there were angry protests by the gay community, who felt that Friedkin was using their territory to make a film that damns homosexual experience and equates it with murderous rituals. This led to confrontations with Friedkin and with the police as demonstrators tried to disrupt the making of the movie. Now that the film is about to open, there has been much political debate in different cities about what to do. With me are three of the members of the Philadelphia Coalition Against the Film Cruising. Scott Tucker is a member of the Philadelphia Lavender Left. He went to New York to participate in the demonstrations against the making of the movie and then wrote an article about the controversy for the Canadian gay journal Body Politic. Rita Ardessa is the director of the Philadelphian Lesbian Gay Task Force. Peggy O'Donnell is with the group Women Against Violence Against Women. The group is also called by its acronym WAVA. We're going to discuss their reactions to the film, their planned actions, and a little later we'll be opening up the phones for your questions and comments. Welcome, everyone, to Fresh Air.
Okay.
Scott, let me start with you and ask you, before you tell us what the movie is about, to tell us how you know what it's about since it hasn't opened yet.
The film script itself was released, leaked to the gay community and gay activists by a member of the production itself. And we have confirmed, both through an interview with Gerald Walker and through talking directly to gay extras, that the film script we have and have read is essentially the script that they have used for the film itself. It has been previewed in Boston and New York, and we've spoken to people in both those cities who have seen it. It's been reviewed in Newsweek, and all of these facts have confirmed our fears about the film, unfortunately.
Tell us what the film is about.
The film, as has been made clear, is, even the script itself, is in many ways dangerously ambiguous and confusing. It's essentially about a psychopathic killer who haunts the leather and S&M bars of New York, and also the parks and public meeting places, and kills and castrates the men he picks up. And Al Pacino stars as an undercover cop who is sent to find the killer, and in the process of finding the killer becomes tainted, shall we say, is the way the film portrays it by that environment.
Okay. Why do you object to the movie?
We think that there are two fundamental lies in the movie. The first is that it portrays gay people only in the context of leather bars and sadomasochism. And the second lie in the movie is that it equates sadomasochism with dying and killing. And neither of these is true. I've been to some of those bars myself. And, you get into conversations with people there. They tell you about their lives. They go to the store. Some of them have wives, children. They have jobs. They have, they live in the world like everyone else does. And this movie doesn't show that. It's not really concerned about people. It's concerned with titillation and violence. And as for S&M, Friedkin has said that he's justified this film by saying that it's only concentrating on a subculture of a subculture, and that it tells the truth about that. It doesn't even tell the truth about S&M, because S&M is primarily concerned with rituals, certain permutations of power. It doesn't necessarily involve even physical contact. It's very different. In other words, these chosen roles, whatever we may feel about them, and there is some ambivalence about that, whatever we may feel about them, those chosen roles are very different from a woman being raped or a gay man being castrated.
Udo Ardessa, why do you object to the movie Cruising?
Mostly for the same reasons that Scott does. It is an insult to our people.
Would you want to add anything, Peggy O'Donnell?
Yes, I would. Women Against Violence Against Women has worked against violent images towards women in the media for many years now. And in this film about gay men, there is the use of violence for exploitation of the gay culture. And we find that very harmful. We see many correlations in this, that the film is basically saying that there is something wrong with being gay. And our society says that there is something wrong with being a woman. We find neither of those statements true, and we are opposed to the film.
The director of the film that we're talking about is William Friedkin, who has also directed, among other movies, The Boys in the Band, The Exorcist, and The French Connection. What were your feelings about Friedkin before the making of this movie? Did you feel one way or another about him as a director?
Yes. When Boys in the Band came out 10 years ago, a character in that film says, you show me a happy homosexual and I'll show you a gay corpse. And 10 years later, with all of the consciousness-raising and political action that's gone on, it was an intense decade for gay liberation, Friedkin has come back with a movie which is strewn with gay corpses. At the time that Boys in the Band came out, it was protested also by gay people, and Friedkin justified his film then by saying, this isn't a film about gay life, it's a murder. He justified his film by saying that Boys in the Band is not about gay life, it's about human problems. He said, I hope there are happy homosexuals, they just don't happen to be in my films. 10 years later, they still don't happen to be in his films, and we think that this is no longer accidental. We think it's a pattern, and we think that is discrimination, and that we are being censored.
Part of the problem is that there are very few films that portray homosexuals in a positive way.
Well, before we get into some of the political considerations in evaluating the movie, and before we get into the tactics that you've considered in your objections to the movie, I'd like to get a little more into the background. There was a lot of demonstrations that occurred while the movie was being made in New York, and Scott, you went down to Manhattan during the filming of Cruising, participated in the demonstrations, and later wrote an article about it for Body Politic. What were some of the objections there? I know New York was very happy to have the film there because it means money for the city when a film crew.
Well, New York is a broad term.
City.
The city administration needs money. And the film did bring $7 million to the city. Nancy Littlefield, who's the city's liaison to filmmakers, in fact said when she was called about the effect it would have on the city, particularly gay people and the public relations attitude towards gay people, she said, look, the film brings us $7 million, and she hung up the phone.
Did you want the movie to say no to the film because of the subject matter?
We couldn't. There are lots of issues involved there, and without getting into the philosophy of civil disobedience and the Constitution, you have to realize that, for example, when the Nazis were planning a march through Skokie is an area, for example, where there are many Jews, many of whom were survivors of the Holocaust. Greenwich Village was a quite similar situation. We knew Friedkin's history, and he came in to the gay community and was making, we knew that he was making this film off our backs. And we didn't want him getting away with that kind of profiteering. This is all in the context, we have to realize, of Anita Bryant, of the increasing right-wing reaction in this country, and also the fact that people are very aware that the gangs of queer bashers have been rampaging in cities throughout the nation, and most recently went on a rampage in Greenwich Village and beat up 8 men, some of whom were straight.
I understand that there were some conflicts between the makers of the movie and people whose apartments or apartment buildings were used during the filming. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yes, they were very insensitive, not only to the needs of the gay community, but to the needs of anyone who lived in the area they were filming in. There were people, they turned off the electricity so that vacuum cleaners, so there wouldn't be any background noise to their soundtrack. They put glue in some people's locks. They hassled people who got in their way. So they were very insensitive.
What kind of confrontations did you have with Friedkin while the movie was being shot?
The confrontations in Greenwich Village were, at the beginning, were low-key and grew increasingly militant as it became clear that we were being backed up increasingly against the wall. Our rights of assembly were repeatedly violated. These are First Amendment rights we're talking about. And the First Amendment does guarantee peaceably to assemble, which is what we were doing. But every time we came to the barricades or to the film site, where the police threw up barricades in front of us, at each time on successive nights, the barricades were further and further from the film site. And also the police harassment intensified night by night, and people inevitably responded to that.
Can you describe a little about the nature of the demonstrations? Like, where did you demonstrate? How did you choose the sites? And what did you, what kind of response would have been acceptable to you?
Response from whom?
From the makers of the movie or from the city.
Okay. Friedkin said himself that mass rallies, pickets, that he would have felt comfortable with that. In fact, the quote is, mass rallies and marches and sit-ins, that kind of civil disobedience is welcome. It's important. If that had been directed against cruising, I might very well have. No, I would have been persuaded to stop filming. That, frankly, is an outright lie, because mass rallies and marches and sit-ins is precisely the kind of civil disobedience we took, and it's precisely the kind of action that he ignored.
Were there any confrontations with the police?
Yes, there were. I think it was very consciousness-raising for the gay community that at various points during the demonstrations, people were clubbed over the head. People had their arms twisted behind them. And people often did fight back.
Okay. So people were hurt?
People were hurt, yes.
Okay. There are a lot of questions that I'm sure people ask themselves when deciding to take an action against a movie, and I want to go into some of those questions and just get a sense of where you stand on them. The first question I think everybody wants answered is, and I'm sure you've already had answered this for a lot of people, how can you take action against a movie when you haven't seen the movie? Isn't that pre-censorship?
Actually, what I've heard most often is censorship. The term pre-censorship is a new
one. That's a question that something like a television station has to get into. Like, if you have a produced program and somebody wants to have you withhold that program before you even broadcast it, that's pre-censorship. It's censorship before anyone has even seen it to make a judgment upon it.
Uh-huh. But we have read the script, you see.
Yeah.
We do know the film.
Mm-hmm.
And
the film has been seen. That.
The film has been seen. It has been reviewed. The script is essentially the movie. If anything, unfortunately, we know now that the movie is, if anything, worse, because it's more confused and ambiguous and therefore more dangerous. And also, apparently, at the end, Al Pacino's girlfriend is also, you know, drawn into this dangerous dynamic, and she puts on the leather clothes that he's been wearing as an undercover cop. So that's one more twist of the knife he's added.
I would also add, and please share this with me, that there has only been one screening of this film in New York City, which will premiere across the country on February 15th. Of the reviews that we have, the movie has been trashed as a poor film. GCC, the largest theater chain across the country, canceled the film after bidding on it because it said the film should have been X-rated rather than R-rated. It is a trash film. In addition to being a film that promotes homophobia, which promotes negative images of homosexuality.
What are your feelings about someone's right to make a movie, even if it trashes a lot of things you believe in, or even the way you live? Because there's two questions there, whether or not
there
it's a good movie.
Several questions there.
Yeah, because sometimes the issue of whether or not something is good or succeeds as good art or is even anything more than just a piece of trash has to be separated from, does the person have a right to make a lousy movie? Does the person have the right to make a piece of trash or an insulting piece of trash?
Certainly has the right to make a trash movie, as Friedkin surely has done. However, one of our problems is that there are very few, as we noted before, very few good films about women generally, minorities generally, including the homosexual minority. So it becomes a much more serious problem for us that the only films people are able to see, that people have access to see, are trash and lies.
The issue of censorship, I think, is central and has to be dealt with because it's an issue that has confused a lot of people. During the protest, some people raised the issue of the First Amendment in the press very strongly, and I would also say rather naively. The issue of free speech isn't pure. The fact is that Friedkin and Weintraub have $11 to $12 million to buy that much more free speech than we do. We know that our organizations, we scrape and scrimp for a few $1,000s to keep an organization running for a year. Exactly that much money is how much they spent for a full-page ad, one-shot deal, one day, in the New York Times. They can buy more free speech, so the First Amendment rights aren't equal. It's sort of like what I think Liebling said about the press. The press is free if you own one. What happened in New York was also that, remember, our freedom of assembly was violated. We didn't have the money to buy the same kind of free speech that Friedkin has.
Nor did we have the money to produce films.
To produce films, exactly. We're certainly not going to, you know, one thing I hope comes out of this is that we won't be too dependent on Hollywood to make better films. We also have to fight for the money and resources to make our own films about our own lives.
Some people feel that they don't really have power unless they have money, because somehow money brings power. Like, as a consumer, your money is purchasing power, and you can either use that to buy products you believe in or withhold that from products you don't trust, and that brings you clout. Do you see this being tied in with that consumer approach to clout?
Yes, I see definitely a strong correlation. When people talk about censorship, I think that that's not exactly what we're dealing with in wanting to stop this film. That the media has been incredibly irresponsible to many sectors of society, to women, to gays, to minorities, to the aged, the list goes on and on. And what we are doing, or trying to do, is use our power as consumers to say that we want Hollywood to be more responsible. We want to see more positive images, or if not positive images, then at least not such negative and oppressive images. And that is part of our power that we are taking into hand.
No, the absolute opposite end of what we're talking about is the point of view where art becomes the servant of politics, where the content of all art is expected to speak directly to the political questions of the day. Would that be overreacting, or would you want to see something like that?
I'm not clear.
I could take that two ways. Part of it, I could just take the politics of the society at large, that this film reinforces the atmosphere, a very negative atmosphere that can exist in America of homophobia. And so is that what you were trying to bring out?
Well, I'm thinking of
Can I sort of address that? I think I do know what you're
getting at. Yeah, I'm thinking of a situation, like I've seen a couple of films of Chinese ballets, and they were really, I don't mean like propagandistic by the communists trying to overrule the free world or anything, but you could see that the ballet had a point, and the point, it was supposed to be about the working man, and it had to be a very heroic kind of thing about the working man.
We're saying
and
that
I mean, for instance, it would be hard for someone to do avant-garde art, which is either content-free or very weird, in a situation that was expected to always show good role models and always be inspirational to the people. And is what you're saying that you'd like to see all art, or all things that try to be art, become inspirational to the people, or always show perfect
before we answer that, which is a little more esoteric, I think we have to realize that films like Cruising and Windows, which is another film we'll get to later, are political. They are making points, and they're making them very strongly. They are propaganda, as they stand. They're saying, they're giving messages which are discriminatory to women and gays. And the larger issue as to whether art should be political or should help people, sure. I mean, should art hurt people? I don't think so.
But you could say in a place where there's freedom around art that some of the art's going to be really good and really help enlighten people and help people just feel a space in the universe, and that some of it's going to be really trashy.
At this point, however, most of it is.
And I think we're looking at a media that bombards us with negative images of women and of gays, and that we have to change that. And I'm not sure how, for at least in my mind, that doesn't have a great deal to do with art. That has, it's just the media and the culture.
In addition to those negative images, the violence that it propagates is absolutely frightening.
I would say, I mean, if one could, you know, simplify, that good politics, good art with good politics, is better art than good art with bad politics. Yes.
What are your goals now? The film has already been made. We'll be talking in a minute about what tactics you're taking, but what are your hopes within the tactics? What goals have you set for yourselves?
Well, on Friday, this Friday, the 15th, we will be picketing in front of the theater at 19th and Chestnut, the Sam Urich. We expect a rather large response. It is a marshaled demonstration. We will be handing out educational leaflets. We have also contacted the broadcast and the print media, and we have asked organizations and individuals to contact their local affiliates to request that any advertising on the film Cruising be withdrawn as a socially responsible act.
And our ultimate goals are that the film should shut down in the city and shut down because of people's awareness to the harm that this film can cause, and that they will choose not to go see it, that the theater owners would choose not to show it.
So you have a twofold goal. One is to educate people who are interested in the movie or who are just reading about it, and the other is to try to shut down the movie or at least make a dent within the profits.
Ultimately, that the film should shut down.
Yes,
because people will choose not to see it.
Yeah. That's right. We're urging people to boycott the film, and we will talk to people. We will put out information. We'll tell them that the film has been seen, that a lot is known about it, that we are exercising our free speech, that we are being censored. And we also want to make it clear that we're organizing a peaceful, orderly demonstration. The situation is very different from New York, where it was actually being made in the gay community. This is a situation where the film is already made and is showing, and we have, you know, utterly different tactics and goals, and people should not be frightened. We have marshals there who are trained in nonviolence.
What would you say to someone? What would you say to me if I said, "Well, look, I don't think I'm going to become a homophobic from seeing this movie. I've seen a lot of bad movies in my time, and I like to think that I can come out and be critical about it and say, this was a good movie, this was a bad movie, this failed as art, this worked as art, this really misinterpreted the way people live, this was very accurate in depicting people. I'd like to think that I could see a movie and walk out as decent human being. So what would you say to me if I said, well, I'd really like to see this movie, because I'm curious about it, because I've been reading a lot about it, because... I would say
that an important part of our strategy is the boycott, and that we don't feel that giving money to this sort of film is productive. I think it would be counterproductive to our ends.
And we would like you to see us as human beings, as opposed to castrators and murderers.
If we pay Hollywood for making this movie, what they pay attention to is profits.
Exactly.
And they'll say, this movie sold, we can make another like it. And for every person who is critical and can be independent in their thinking, there are many, many, many more at this point in history in the U.S. who are susceptible to homophobia. Not because they're ignorant, not because they're stupid, but because those messages are constantly sent out through the press and the media.
Okay, what I'd like to do is open up the telephones and invite our listeners to call with any questions or comments. I'm sure a lot of people now are deciding whether or not they will go see the movie or not. Our phone number is 387-6660, and we invite you to call with any questions or comments about your perceptions of what you've heard about the film Cruising. If you'd like to ask any questions to my guests, we'd be interested in hearing your opinions as well. The phone number again is 387-6660. If you're calling from outside the Philadelphia area, we're at area code 215. I'd like to just reintroduce my guest for those of you who are tuning in. We're talking about the film Cruising, a film directed by William Friedkin, who also made the films The Boys in the Band, The Exorcist, and The French Connection. The film stars Al Pacino. He is featured as a heterosexual cop whose mission is to find the killer of homosexual men. This killer meets them at S&M bars in New York. He castrates many of his victims. My guests are objecting to this film for political reasons because of the way that it depicts homosexuals. My guests are Scott Tucker, who is with the Lavender Left in Philadelphia, and he has written an article about this movie for the Canadian gay journal Body Politic. With us is Rita Ardessa, the director of the Philadelphia Gay Lesbian Task Force, and Peggy O'Donnell with the group Women Against Violence Against Women, a group called WAVA. Okay, we have a couple of people on the phone. I think we're ready to take a phone call. We'll go to the first phone now. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Terry?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Dan Coyle. I was listening to your broadcast, and I'd like to ask you a question. I was reading this week's Time Magazine review of the film, and I'd like to quote you two sentences by Frank Rich, if I may.
Go ahead.
From the review. He says, quote, "Yet Cruising is not anti-gay, any more than the film like American Gigolo is anti-heterosexual. Friedkin repeatedly, even tediously, reminds the audience that the S&M crowd is but a small, atypical subculture within a diverse homosexual world." Now, could you ask your guests to comment on that, since Frank Rich did see the film and they did not?
Okay, I would simply like to respond with a quote from Newsweek. And this is essentially making the same point we're making. "Friedkin shows no signs of having digested the thought through his material. If he doesn't know what his movie is about, how are we to know? Though the film is now preceded by a statement that the story is not meant to be an indictment or representative portrait of the homosexual world, it does succeed in creating a new homosexual stereotype. Not the limp-wrist of the effeminate pansy of old, but a menacing, macho muscle man who pursues sex with surly ferocity and barely suppressed violence." The other issue I think we should address is that comparing it to a heterosexual film is totally false, because straight people have thousands and thousands of films which do in fact show all aspects of their lives, whether they're parents, lovers, truck drivers, lawyers, or sometimes killers. Gay people have very few, and most of those few slander and stereotype us.
Okay, then you take exception with Mr. Rich's remarks that constantly through the film he tediously reminds you it's not just a thing at the beginning, and you think that he's wrong.
The Newsweek reviewer does. We do.
Time reviewer, I'm sorry.
And, you're quoting Time. I'm quoting Newsweek. But, yes, we do take exception to that very strongly.
Even though he has seen the film and you have not.
We have read the script.
Films are frequently edited and changed very drastically in the final changes from it.
Yes, thank you. We understand that the film is worse than the final script that we read.
I'm sure you realize that.
People who have seen the film have told us that they follow the script we have read quite closely.
What if the people who saw the film that you trust or have a, go in there with a tremendous bias to start with? Chances are they'll miss what they don't want to see.
We've spoken not only to gay people, but also to heterosexuals who've seen the film.
Let me just say, what I've read made me think that there were some things tacked on, which is maybe what our listener's referring to, you know, saying that... Well, I've heard that one of the cops who assigns Pacino the mission takes him aside and says, look, you're going to be seeing a lot of terrible things, and I just want you to know not all homosexuals are like this.
Okay.
But is that the image. Kind of thing you're referring to? That kind of, I forget what the word is.
Disclaimer,
yeah, that kind of disclaimer. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I guess what basically bothers me is the fact that you have so little trust in the basic intelligence and sensitivity of the general public. That they won't come out of this film saying, oh, this is ridiculous, you know, gay people are not like this at all.
I think that there's cause for that, and if I can make a correlation to the position of women in the society, that violence against women now is higher, the rate of violence is higher than it has been in years, and there have been studies linking this to the general media and to the portrayal and equation of violence with sex. So I think it is fair to say that when women and gays are being attacked on the streets, that there is a correlation between actual violence and what is presented in film.
Okay. We're going to get going because there's a lot of other people on the phone.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for calling.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
By the way, I would like to say that we're not questioning the intelligence of the public. We're simply recognizing the fact that the public is constantly inundated by propaganda.
In addition to the fact that the advertising of the film Cruising is highlighting Al Pacino, who is undoubtedly a fine actor, and is presenting the film simply as a cop story in which someone is going to look for a killer. There is no implication, direct or indirect, about what this film is really about. People who are going to see the film, unless they have read these particular reviews, will not know what the film is about.
They may think they're seeing a murder mystery.
Precisely.
Okay, let me take another phone call. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air now.
Oh, okay. I think it's important, considering we've all probably heard about on the radio and in public hearings and everything about discrimination against gays in for instance, housing accommodations and other areas. I think it is really kind of appropriate to also, even though this is, of course, true, to also turn around and look at it in the other direction and realize that it also happens that people in the gay community do after, of course not in all cases, but sometimes after having bought buildings, decide to make their own little communities, and the poor old tenants that have been there before are forced to find other accommodations. And the only comment I wish to make is that if one group of people, for instance right now, the discussion is about gay people, happen to wish to fit into the world, there are a lot of problems, but they're made worse when this group, which has been discriminated against, turns right around and does not try to sort of police its own community, the members, and spread the word that it's not good to discriminate against others, even though the group has been discriminated against.
Thank you. I think we can respond to that by, I think what you're talking about is a phenomenon that's gone by the name of gentrification. What that means is people with money moving into neighborhoods where they renovate buildings and then force lower-income people out. I think what you have to realize is that there's been a kind of anti-gay backlash, and gay people have been accused of doing a lot of that. It happens to be the case that it's predominantly done by upper-class or middle-class heterosexual professionals, and it's a way of dividing and conquering both blacks and gay people. We're both oppressed. Poor people and gay people and black people are all oppressed, and we should be fighting back together. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. I just want to make it clear for anyone who's thinking of calling that we're not debating whether gays have a right to be equals in this world. We're assuming that they do. That the discussion of this afternoon's program is about the tactics that you use when a movie offends you. What do you do? Do you just let it sit, or do you take action against it? That's the subject at hand, and that's what we'd like you to address. If you want to talk about whether the gays have the right to do this, that, or another thing, please don't call. Hello, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air. You're on the air now.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize it was me.
Yeah, it's you.
I wanted to point out that I am completely sympathetic with their aims, but I'm concerned that the tactics may cause a wider audience for the film than otherwise. I remember what happened, was a year or 2 years ago with a program on Channel 12 that nobody wanted. There's a lot of fuss, and many more people watched the film about the Nazis. What do you think of that?
That she's referring to a show that was done for the program Black Perspective on the News, in which there were guests. The head of the Ku Klux Klan and of the American Nazi Party were represented, and there were segments of both the black and the Jewish community who were very against the giving over of television time to groups who were so violent and aggressive and hateful in their approaches. So there were pickets around here. She's saying that you're saying more people watched it. I don't know if that's true.
I think it was borne out that they have a much wider audience was secured. And by the way, you well, my point of view very well just now. Thanks.
So basically, I think she's asking the question: are you afraid that your actions against the movie are going to draw more attention to the movie than if nothing was done? Is that what you're asking?
Or maybe something different is done. I know it's not easy to sponsor a film that shows gays in a decent, normal light, but you need more of the corrective rather than to fight against what's wrong.
I would say that how the corrective is better films and more of them, and that we can't necessarily depend on Hollywood to do that. We'll need to make those many of those ourselves.
You see, part of our deciding to demonstrate against this film relates to what Scott just said. Hollywood will not make those kinds of films about our lives until we make our presence well known and very clear. We have to make it clear to Hollywood and to the...
Hollywood will make films if people go to see them, and if you
precisely
what you're doing causes more people to go to see it inadvertently, you know, that's not your aim. But if that's what happens, I'd be sorry.
I appreciate that, and I understand what you're saying. What we want to do is to share with people our feelings about our lives.
Well,
we want to share with people the fact that this movie is a lie about our lives, that it is a blatant distortion of the reality of our lives.
If you will, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Did you want to say something, Scott?
Yeah, I think what the issue that woman raised is very important, but we have to realize also that they have sunk $12 million into this film, so that no matter what we do, no matter what tactic we take, anywhere from having a vigil or staying home and keeping silent or being on the picket lines, anything we do, they will try and turn to their profit. And given that that is the case, what we have is a tank approaching us, and we're not going to passively lie down in front of it. If it draws, we will try and cripple their profits, but we will also try and educate the public.
Okay, we'll take some more phone calls. We have some open lines now if you'd like to get through. The number is 387-6660. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I would just like to congratulate Scott and Rita and Peggy for being on the air and taking a very strong stand against movie cruising and windows. And I think that the lines, the correlations that they're drawing between violence in the media and violence in the streets and in the homes are quite clear, and there's no question at all about it. And just to prove that they'll never have the comfort of our silences again, I'm going to be there tomorrow night.
Thank you.
You
are working hard.
We will.
Bye-bye. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. I don't know if you're aware of this this incident or not, and I don't know if you draw any connections to it, but there's a, you know, the movie that's being made starring Vanessa Redgrave that was being filmed in Pennsylvania about the life of Fania Fenelon,
yes.
who is a woman who was in Auschwitz during World War II, and she was in the concentration camp orchestra, and they were spared, the women in that were spared their life because they had to be there to play on command for the SS. She's now living in Paris, in France, and this film is being made about her life, starring Vanessa Redgrave, a woman whose politics she severely disagrees with, because Redgrave is an advocate of the PLO and very anti-Israel. And Fanny Fenelon, although she isn't necessarily pro-Israel, mm-hmm. says that she's against someone who's anti-Israel. Mm-hmm. So she feels very ripped off by the network and very bitter about Vanessa Redgrave. It's another example. I don't know if you'd say a connection exists or not, but it's an example of someone feeling that mm-hmm. a movie has gone out of their control and is somehow violating them.
I think that woman yes. feels that no matter what the politics are involved, I think that Fanya Fenelon probably feels that her life has been ripped off.
That she does.
Yeah.
Do you see a connection in that? Because it's just two incidents.
Our lives have been ripped off. Not only have our lives been ripped off, but we also have to realize that we built our own movement. And the more we come out of the closets and organize, of course, the more that reactionaries will also try and organize against us. And one way to do that is to profit off of our oppression.
We'll get back to the phones in a second. I just want to ask you another question about precedent. Are you worried about setting a precedent, or do you think that that's not going to be a concern now? For instance, if a movie was made whose star was a woman who needed an abortion,
mm-hmm.
and if the pro-life people came out to try to disrupt the making of the movie and to try to boycott the movie and see to it that films about the murder of fetuses didn't make any money, if they did something like that, how would you feel? Because they would feel that their politics were getting ripped off and that their sincere commitments to preserve life were getting ripped off. Or do you feel that you don't have to compare it to that?
I don't feel that there's a valid comparison. I think part of what we are fighting for is rights for all people that...
To express their point of view.
Well, I precisely. Think we're all,
if this is yeah. a precedent that asserts our First Amendment rights, then so be it. We support that right for all people.
I agree, absolutely. I think we're all strong civil libertarians. The issue with the right to life, we might add, is that they have plenty of free speech in this country. They are extremely well-funded. They have a network of right-wing groups. They have the support of many religious groups who are very well-funded. The issue, the hard thing, has been for women to get across their point of view that they mm-hmm. have the right to control their own bodies. We are uh-huh. for the rights of all people. Groups like the anti-abortionists, I think one would have to say, are against the rights of women to decide
exactly.
their own bodies.
What we would really like to see is that all groups were equally funded so that all points of view could be expressed.
Okay, we'll go back to the phones now. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say a few things that are kind of following along with what Scott and Rita and others are bringing up. I think the free speech issue here is a sort of a red herring. I mean, we're talking about a product that Friedkin and others are marketing, and the people who are organizing the demonstration are not asking that the film no longer be made. It's a fact. The film has been made. But what they are asking people to do is simply not to buy the product. And I think that that's a really important distinction, which makes all this talk about free speech and so forth, I think, something of a dead letter. So that the tactic of a boycott is very appropriate given the fact mm-hmm. that these people are in the marketplace pushing a product mm-hmm. that we don't think people should be buying. So that's kind of what I wanted to raise.
We want a better product. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amen.
A woman, too.
A woman there, Rita.
Thanks so much for calling.
Right.
Bye-bye. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. I'd just like to say that I think that the previous caller mentioned, that the issue about free speech is a red herring, and that when you're dealing with someone like William Friedkin, you're dealing with a first-class economic animal. And I think that... Yeah, all his films contain violence. I've seen most of them, the French Connection, The Exorcist. Violence is his fort. And I think that you have to realize that he is really basically just trying to sell this movie. His pretensions to art and his arguments about free speech and censorship are just so much, are just so much air. And I think that what I'm really concerned about is that for the sake of people, for gays and for women, and for anyone else who may be adversely affected by this film, that there be a nationwide campaign to cripple it. Because first-class films, even though they are made by a freak, can't fail. I'm sure that not every film that he's made has been successful, and the boycott is well worth working on a nationwide basis. I'd like to ask the people there if they have a campaign that's going to be mounted in, not only, say, in New York and Philadelphia, in areas where there's a large homosexual community, but also in other areas of the country where it's important to attack this film so that it doesn't make a lot of money elsewhere. And also, do they have a plan for damaging, say, the foreign rentals? Because a lot of films that are made by Hollywood actually gross more in foreign markets than they do in the domestic market.
That's very interesting, and I think that's the first time I've heard that brought up about the foreign market, and it's certainly something that, now that it's been brought up, we will all look into. The campaign against the film is active across the country, and there will be protests in Chicago, in San Francisco, in New York, in Minneapolis, in Philadelphia, and other cities. Yes.
Well, I think that's very important, and I would suggest that as you say, you haven't really been thinking about the foreign markets, but it's a very important concept, because especially when you're dealing with a film like this, okay, which is a big budget film and which contains a lot of violence, gratuitous sex, and so on, this is exactly the type of Hollywood product to get shipped overseas to Europe and Asia and elsewhere, and wherever they can sell it, and makes a tremendous amount of profit that way.
Yeah.
In order to keep track of how well your campaign is going, you have to realize that on an $11 million film, they're going to have to earn almost $30 million before this film can be considered a break-even project and begin to show a profit. So I think that you're really looking at the domestic market is really only one side of the coin. And I really hope that that a lot of effort is made, to whatever degree that you can, that you're able to attack this film on a global basis.
Okay, thanks for your comments.
I would like to make a comment to you. We would very much appreciate your input. If you could call one of the three of us about this after the program or at one of our respective offices, we'd be delighted to hear from you to talk more about the foreign market issue. Thank you for calling.
The task force, the Lesbian and Gay Task Force office number
is 386-1530 or 1610.
I just want to pick up on something that he was asking. Does anyone plan to go into places where there aren't visible large homosexual communities where this film might be playing?
Are you referring to the premiere tomorrow specifically?
No. I mean, when the film opens in other parts of the country that aren't major cities where there's a large visible homosexual community.
As Scott noted, there will be demonstrations across the entire country.
In major cities. We do have to concentrate our forces. Again, it's an economic matter that they have a lot of money and we have to scrape and scrimp to organize.
Okay.
Can we just repeat the film site for the protest? It will be this Friday, tomorrow evening, we'll be meeting at 6:30 p.m. at 19th and Chestnut in front of the Sam Eric Theater.
Okay, I think we'll have time for another phone call. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I am very much in support of Peggy and Rita and Scott in taking action against this film. And I wanted to comment on Peggy's statement that so much of women's and gays' power at this point does lie in economics, that maybe Hollywood will not listen to what we're saying, but if they don't see our money, they may get the message.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Now, there's another movie that's going to open shortly after this, and that's called Windows. And Rita, what do you know about the movie, and what are your feelings about it?
Well, I know some about Windows, but Peggy could share more information with you about that than I.
This film opened in New York a few weeks ago, and it's about a lesbian woman who is in love with a straight woman. She hires a taxi driver to rape this woman and tapes films the rape and views
and
it.
Enjoys and enjoys her moans and groans.
This film is very, very offensive because it is saying that lesbian women are responsible for rape, that they swoon over rape, which is such a radical distortion of the truth. It also is a violation and a very misrepresentation of the intimate relationships that women have with women. And I think such hateful portrayals of lesbian only encourage the oppression that exists already in the society.
Do you have any action planned if and when the film opens in Philadelphia?
Hopefully. There was an action when it opened in New York. About 30 women were protesting in front of the theater.
300. It was
big. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it got very, very poor reviews. We're hoping that it won't open in Philadelphia.
However, if,
but
it, does,
if it does,
we are well
we are
prepared.
Taking
well prepared to stop it.
There's mm-hmm. absolute solidarity on this.
Uh-huh.
That if that the Cruising Coalition could very quickly become a Windows Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And it will. And as mm-hmm. Peggy noted, being lesbian is equated with being a rapist
uh-huh.
in this film. We become the rapist.
uh-huh. Okay, well, we're about out of time. There's a couple of minutes left if anyone would like to make any final comments.
Thank you for the show, for interviewing
Thank us. You. And if we could do more programs like this, people would have a better understanding that lesbians and gay men are actually real, live human beings.
Okay, well, I thank you all for being here. Thanks to everybody who called this afternoon. I've been speaking with three people who are all from the Coalition Against the Film Cruising. This is the movie that opens tomorrow, the one directed by William Friedkin that stars Al Pacino. My guests have been Rita Ardessa, the director of the Philadelphia Gay Lesbian Task Force, Scott Tucker, who's with the group Lavender Left in Philadelphia, and he's written an article about this controversy for the Body Politic, a Canadian gay journal. With us also has been Peggy O'Donnell of WAVA, which is the acronym for the group Women Against Violence Against Women. Well, that's it for this afternoon's Fresh Air. Tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock, we'll be joined by Victor Franklin. He is the author of a book about the history of education of blacks in Philadelphia. He teaches at Yale University and will be visiting Philadelphia tomorrow when he joins us. We'll talk about his research into black education. At 4:30 tomorrow afternoon, we'll be joined by director Barry Boies, and he's the director of the production of The Miser, production by the McCarter Theater Company, currently in performance at the Annenberg Center in Philadelphia. And Fresh Air's film reviewer Bill Van Wert will be with us at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, so I hope you can join us then. Contributing to this afternoon's Fresh Air was Francis Davis. Technical director this afternoon was Scott Williams. Production assistance today was provided by Ken Persing. The associate producer of Fresh Air is Danny Miller. He's on vacation. Sitting in for him is Charles Hardy. My name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. Have a real good evening.